Hello, and welcome to Fort Wayne Ballet's Kinetic Conversations. Today's episode will continue our discussions on Fort Wayne Ballet's final main stage of the year, Romeo and Juliet. Today we have guests that are men, which is sometimes unique for the ballet world. With us today, Robert LaFosse and David Ingram. So gentlemen, welcome.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, Jim.
First, guys, why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about you? Who are you, your career, and then we'll go into the conversation about Romeo and Juliet. David, do you want to start?
Sure. Thanks, Jim. I was actually a student at the Fort Wayne Ballet in 1998. Grew up in the academy and went on to dance professionally for a while. And then, came back and with Karen here at the ballet, we staged, I believe it was the first time Fort Wayne Ballet had done Romeo and Juliet back in 2014, I think. And then we put that one together with the orchestra. Samir Patel conducted that. And then John Sandmeyer built the sets. That was a very exciting time. I remember talking with Karen about what ballet she's always wanted to do here. And she said, I've always wanted to do Romeo and Juliet. And then I'll never forget that time in her office where we were like, well, let's do it. And so that was a fun moment to start to construct that one for the first time. And I'm just so excited Robert LaFosse is here with his perspective from a national, international, brilliant stage of American Ballet Theater to give us information on the choreography, the tone of everything. I've been here all week watching that, and it's just been so exciting. I can't wait for the show.
Thank you, David. I grew up in Texas, where I studied lots of different forms of dance, but I was also in musical theater, and then I got a scholarship to the Harkness Ballet, and I studied there, and I also studied in New York at School of American Ballet. And then I got into American Ballet Theater, where I performed Romeo in Sir Kenneth Macmillan's Romeo and Juliet. I was 25 at the time, and it was probably the most exhilarating experience of my life. The ballet is really hard for the man. There's four different pas de deux, which is a dance for two people, and there's several solos over three acts. It's the most exhausting, and I actually got a personal trainer for like to 8 weeks to do the lifts. Macmillan came in to work with us, and I got cast with Leslie Brown, who was the star of Turning Point, the movie. And we were basically the first cast to do it. But I ended up doing it with other ballerinas as well. But I have to say it was probably one of the high points of my career. Yeah.
Well, you've kind of opened the door for the next question or part of what this podcast is about. It's often referred to in passing, not officially, as sort of a man's ballet, and you've just already alluded to what's necessary to do the role. But maybe from the perspective of two males who have done it in various places over their careers, probably different roles as well, maybe not always Romeo, why? Why would you say, if someone were in passing, say that? And for the listener who might be thinking about coming, what is it that makes it interesting from the standpoint of being a little bit different?
Yeah, I would say I remember I got the opportunity to dance Romeo. And again, that I felt like the stress of that, the weight of that was just very heavy. And I think it's, for me, it's the narrative, what you have to give emotionally, but also technically, and how those two things, they must combine. You know, there's no counting. You know the music, you know what's coming next, and you gotta be there for Juliet at the right level, the right volume of when it happens. It's a hard one for, like, if you're not in it, if you're not trying to tell the truth and believe what you're doing, then it can really not work, and the audience can see that immediately. That's, I always found that to be really challenging. And it is such an iconic role. I feel like there's a certain responsibility to it. In no way am I Romeo, but I have to represent that. It's kind of an interesting, like, it's a lot of weight, a lot of pressure.
I think what makes it a men's ballet, quote unquote, is the sheer numbers. There's a lot of sword fighting in this ballet. It starts with the duel, basically to show that the families are feuding, and that's done through a lot of men sword fighting. The women don't sword fight in that period of time. So already you've established that, and also it's that period of time, I think men really dominated women, and there are no swans, there are no ghosts or willies, so there's not a court of ballet of women. There are very few roles. There's women who dance in the village scene. There are three harlots in the first act. Then there are, I think in this production, there are eight friends of Juliet that come in and dance around her bed for her wedding day. So basically there's 11 female roles for the soloist court of ballet. And then there's Juliet, her mother, and then the Montagues, Lady Montague. So it's just the play itself. I mean, it's Shakespeare's fault.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But I think it has to do with the fighting.
Yeah.
You know, that's the most important reason why there's more men. I personally think the ballet is more about Juliet. It's her story.
Yeah, and from that perspective, maybe elaborate on that a little bit more when you talk about that.
Well, Juliet is, to me, is the strongest character, not only in Shakespeare, but also in the ballet. It's because it's her choices that she makes. She makes the choice to go to the friar to get the potion, to pretend like she's dead so that they can escape. The story relies on her actions. Romeo just sort of follows along because he's so in love. Now, not to say that it's not equally his story, but I think what drives it is her actions. And this same is true for West Side Story, which is the same story told in a different period of time.
Well, and to that point, what's interesting too about this ballet is you've got a variety of somewhat developed sub-stories because of the play. So you're dealing with Tybalt and the dynamic there. You're dealing with Mercutio and the feud. You're dealing with Romeo and the situation. So you've got these layers that I don't know how many other ballets, I'm thinking through some of the classical ballets, whether it may be the prince or the champion role and then somebody else like Giselle, where you've got two male characters and they're playing different. But it's a little different here. You've got different layers, not just with the court of ballet sword fighting, but now you've got these layers. They're playing off of each other and there's subtext. There's sub-stories that are going on because of the play. So I don't know, have you guys thought about that? I'm sure you have, but also have you ever played those roles? Have you been the Mercutio role or have you always been Romeo? And if you weren't Mercutio or Tybalt, thinking about the guys that were and the things that made that really work within the ballet, that counterbalance in terms of the dynamic.
I always found it in being cast in classical ballets, I was very, very happy to be the bad guy. It was just, I found it very fun, really, really easy to time things. And I'd found that in the complexities of it, as we look at like a ballet of circumstances, like Giselle, where there's not really a bad person in it, it is all circumstance. We kind of compare that to Romeo and Juliet, is how, yes, there's warring, there's Tybalt is the aggressive one, but he's got this job to do. We don't know what the Montagues did to this family. So it's like this unknown act of like who struck first and feud. But I think that there's a character like that that we've all known in some capacity. And I think that that's what makes the ballet great, is that every person in the ballet, every character, we know someone like them. We feel like them at some point where we have empathy for them. We can understand those perspectives. But yeah, I will say, well, and you know, if you're Tybalt, you get the second half of the ballet off because you're dead, so.
You're done, yeah. Literally.
Yeah,
so. I think what distinguishes this from other ballets really is the idea. It's not a fairy tale, first of all. It's about real people. It's about families feuding about, in West Side Story, it's territory. I think this has to do with power. And there's not an evil person in the ballet. There's like the way there is in Swan Lake, you know, or I think of the Willie. Who's the head of the Willies?
Why am I like
Myrta? She's sort of evil. This doesn't have that. This has this feud. And what happens with the feud is that Mercutio gets killed by Tybalt. And I don't think, you know, spoiler alert, the way we're going to do it in this production is, and I'm stealing this from West Side Story, instead of him stabbing him in the back, it becomes more of an accident. So then Romeo, in a fit of rage, really starts fighting with Tybalt. I don't know if he really wants to kill him, but he's angry. And I think that's intentional only out of this sure, you know how you go blank, you say or do something that you don't really... And I think that's what we're dealing with here, is sort of this male aggression, the male version of how to solve problems. And the women become very passive in this because they're always behind the man. That's why I think it's interesting perspective that Juliet is the one who's masterminding this getaway that they're going to, you know, they're going to leave and elope. But it goes terribly wrong.
Yeah, right.
Spoiler. I won't spoil how it ends, but we're dealing with some very major topics. You know, it's not a simple story. So I played Mercutio, and I didn't enjoy it at all. It's a very difficult role. It's usually for someone that's, you know, I'm just romantic by nature. But yeah, there are a lot of great roles for men in this ballet. Not to say there are not great roles for women. Lady Capulet has that wonderful scene at the end when, because she's also in love with Tybalt. And so there's also this intrigue. It's kind of like a great miniseries.
Well, and that subtext, I think, if most people are probably familiar with the play from having read it in high school, but if you look at that subtext and you understand the characters, there's so much more to watch in terms of how the ballet is progressing as opposed to just what is Romeo and Juliet, what are they doing and how are they advancing the story? There are other things there, which leads to another. So we alluded to it as well. This is a very different type of ballet than most people see if they're used to going to traditional ballet or what they in their head. So you're not going to see the large traditional court of ballet with tutus like you would if you went to Swan Lake or even Nutcracker with the snow. You're not seeing that. Although you're seeing large scenes like the pillow dance and the various things that are happening at the party or the gathering. This is also a juxtaposition that's a little bit different because those ballets that I just mentioned, end of the 1900s, end of that century. You're moving now into a traditional ballet kind of mindset where you have the traditional technique and things, but it's 20th century ballet. And even though you're dealing with, you know, different elements, it's different. And I think sometimes people don't think about the fact that it's 20th century ballet. The music's written, the libretto, all of that's 20th century and all the things that go on with the 20th century. Also at a time, which we talked about in the previous podcast, a lot going on in Russia and the controls around what you can and can't do artistically with the struggles that are going on, not only with Prokofiev, but Shostakovich, the libretto, the back and forth between the Kirov and the Bolshoi, all of that stuff is in a different place than it would have been 50, 60 years earlier. So maybe talk about how that influences what you see on the stage as opposed to what you would have seen on the stage in 1894.
I think the big difference is the pantomime. What we're dealing with is pantomime made a huge shift to more naturalism. So before the pantomime, you would say, you would gesture to someone, you, I, Mary, and you would point to your ring finger. There was pantomime for a queen where you would make this a sort of gesture over your head to show the crown. So all of this pantomime was something that the audience understood and they were educated. They actually took class in understanding ballet pantomime. The audience did. So what happened in the 20th century is that I think most people saw that as old fashioned.
Right.
And so especially in England and Germany, when they started doing these newer productions, they got rid of this sort of traditional, you know, you, I, me pointing and tried to make it look like they were really speaking with each other and they were really talking and they used gestures only when they had to explain. But most of it is done through physical touch or, you know, it's more realistic and not just indicated. That's the difference you're going to see in this.
Yeah, that's amazing. I'm thinking about the Ostrichtanz, like that the rejection of everything in Germany, where they're talking about you know, leaving behind the classic forms, and they're looking for truth. And you definitely like the party, the ball, like how you stand, how you look. For me, narrative-wise, that's the most important part of the ballet. There's other scenes where you can see like it's built in, the narrative's there, but there's the party is just so complex. Everybody's got to be ready to tell the story at every moment. And it can't be done with, I see over there.
Right. You know, I mean, we're only dealing with physicality. You know? We're not dealing with words. So there's only so much you can do. It's like the famous quote, Balanchine said, there are no uncles in ballet. I can't show you that's my uncle on stage. It's impossible. You can sort of visualize that's my mother with, you know, someone younger and older, but it's very hard to, there's a lot of limitations to what ballet can actually express.
Right.
But emotions, that's where we have it over everything. You know, we can express emotions much better than any other form, I believe. You know, the words that Romeo and Juliet say to each other are nowhere near the volume that we have with just the sheer physicality and the passion that we have. The kiss is still a kiss in Shakespeare, but when you lift a woman over your head, it expresses this sheer passion and exhilaration and ecstasy. those things that we have at our disposal, the tools that we have. So it's exciting. And this is a very physical ballet. You know, I want you, if I can't have you, then I'm going to drink potion and pretend it, you know, it's all physical stuff. It's stuff that we have to explain. So it's kind of a great ballet to, you know, most people know the story anyway, but maybe not little kids.
Well, to wrap up this conversation, what I'd like to do is, you both alluded to opportunities where you played roles and something. So maybe to somebody who's coming to see the performance, from your perspective, maybe something you remember was a particular moment when you did the piece, or something that stood out to you, maybe what it felt like, or something that illuminated something having done it after just seeing it, but now I did it. Something you kind of leave a nugget with us in terms of something that maybe somebody will pick up in terms of our Romeo and Juliet in terms of what they're doing.
I remember joining North Carolina Dance Theater back when it was called that. It's now Charlotte Ballet. And I arrived at that company, and after a few months, we knew Romeo and Juliet was coming up in the rep, and I was like, sweet, I'll be a Capulet, I'll die, you know. But surprisingly, was asked to do Romeo by Jean-Pierre Bonfou and the amazing Patricia McBride. They're both amazing. But I remember being so stressed, and Robert, you were talking about the weight of it, the conditioning, like the rigor of it. I remember being so lost in the pressure and in like the story and the narrative. It was a transformative experience. It was very, very stressful. And I remember it was a dress rehearsal, and I was running around, and I was thinking, I was doing the next thing, and I was trying to fix something, and I missed a cue. And it was the first time I'd ever missed a cue in my life.
Oh no.
And something was happening, and I realized, and I just ran out there real fast, and my boss, Jean-Pierre, who's just amazing, just started laughing over the microphone and said, let's go back and try again. And it was the kindest.
It's good that it was a rehearsal. And not
Yeah, right. But he was just, and that is him to this day, as well as Patty. They're just the kindest people ever. But I remember being so engulfed, and like, there was something about the narrative and the way the physicality demanded the emotion where I sort of started to lose abilities in other areas, you know. It was an interesting time. And I watch dancers do that now when they deal with imagery, when they deal with meaning and movement. Sometimes they'll lose the steps and the counts, and that's sometimes okay. But I find that really fascinating when the body or the dancer can transcend that way. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they can't take all of their knowledge with them. They have to leave some and find new areas. Like I feel as though that ballet, especially watching Alessandra Ferri, or, you know, and people do this, that work of Juliet, I feel as though that is like definitely a part of their work. Mm-hmm. That transcendence is why we're all, I mean, I think that's why we all do this anyway, to feel those moments. It can be transformative in ways.
I think the thing that strikes me the most about this ballet is the music. It's one of the great, great, great ballet scores.
It's a great score.
I mean, and it's wonderful that we're getting to do it with the live
orchestra
here.
With the orchestra, with the Philharmonic, right?
Well, I remember when I was rehearsing it, we rehearsed with piano, and the transition from piano to orchestra. The ballet literally sweeps you away, not only the dancer. You almost have to hold back because it pushes you in a way. It's very powerful. The orchestrations are unbelievably powerful. And the audience is also, you sort of see the story in the music when you're just listening to it. I mean, I think it's one of the great, great, great ballet scores, that Swan Lake, Sleeping Beauty. It really does tell the story emotionally, and you can close your eyes and sort of see the sword fighting happening, and you can sort of close your eyes and see Romeo and Juliet, him dancing with her dead body, you know,
right.
Which happens. And it's powerful. So I always will remember that first time when the curtain went up and that enormity of that. You know, it was really, really mind-boggling. But yeah, you're lucky. We're lucky to have a live orchestra here.
It should be a great show. Like you said, not only the production, but also the live music, and it'll be a full evening of theater. So I encourage everybody to come. Well, gentlemen, thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Jim. Hey, and Jim, I was thinking about, you were asking me about what the pillow dance meant. I think I know what the pillow dance is about. I've been, sometimes I think we've been there when your wife is redecorating and you're trying to help, and she's like, you're just holding the pillow for forever. And then you're like, where does this?
That's funny.
And then you just wait.
Why are they holding
pillows? You just wait until she tells you where to put that pillow. And you're just like, yep, I get it. That's that.
Not just to support your knees when you have to go down on your knees.
Maybe they get frustrated and they're like, I can't do this. I can't hold this pillow anymore. And they fall down. They fall out of frustration.
Right. That's what it means.
So the Capulets are interior designers. That's what the feud was about. I think it's a fashion.
You got a backstory. Okay. Well, we'll look for that.
Okay.
Well, gentlemen, thank you. I appreciate it. We'll look forward to the production. Fort Wayne Ballet's final main stage production, Romeo and Juliet with the Fort Wayne Philharmonic, will be April 19th through 21st at the Arch United Center. You can purchase tickets by visiting the Fort Wayne Ballet website, artstix.org, or calling the box office at 422-4226. Kinetic Conversations is brought to you by Fort Wayne Ballet and Wayne Shaw Productions, and our guests today were Robert LaFosse and David Ingram. If you'd like to receive notifications on future podcasts, please like the podcast and go to fortwayneballet.org to sign up for notifications on performances, podcasts, and more ballet news. You'll also find a library of past episodes on our website in the menu of options. Until next time, I'm Jim Sparrow, and thanks for listening to Kinetic Conversations with Fort Wayne Ballet.
This has been a Wayne Shout production.